Despite debate over how best to deliver early childhood education, there's considerable agreement that some form of teaching and learning, whether in a school setting or one less formal, greatly benefits children by the time they reach traditional school age. Research shows such children are better equipped to learn, better behaved, and overall more prepared. Bipartisan interest in the topic is beginning to elicit programs in some states, including Michigan. Meanwhile, a group of Marquette-area educators is encouraging parents, grandparents, and guardians to begin the process at home, providing information, basic curricula, and techniques designed to help prepare children for success in school and a lifetime of learning. We'll talk to some of the principals in that effort just ahead on Media Meet. Welcome to WNMU's Media Meet. I'm your host, Bill Hart. Our guests are educator, author, and founder of Grandparents Teach Too, Iris Caters, and former school administrator, guidance counselor, and current president of Grandparents Teach Too, Jean Hetrick. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Let's begin with some general introductions. You folks are not without credentials. Tell us something about your background as it relates to the field of education and specifically in early childhood education.
Sure. I've been teaching in the classroom and also as a reading specialist since 1970 and also working with adults. But when I had a two-year-old grandchild for the first time, I had to go back and learn more. So since 2008, I've been studying what to do with preschool children and focusing on that. So I guess you never stop learning. Or training yourself.
That's right. Jean?
My interest in early childhood actually comes from my experience in the classroom. My favorite classroom to teach has been kindergarten.
Okay.
And as an elementary principal, I was able to see all aspects of education.
Sure.
And as an adjunct at Northern, I was involved in the early childhood department itself.
Okay. Now about the project to which you've applied your knowledge and skills. I understand Grandparents Teach Too was launched in 2008. This is coincident with your grandchild here.
Yes.
As founder of the project, Iris, what's the mission and how did it come about?
Well, we're basically trying to help parents and grandparents, since so many grandparents are now helping out, 34% to 37%, to help them know how they can prepare their child for school, to reduce the stress of their own child care, and help to promote reading and social emotional growth.
Okay.
And so we know that in doing these different activities, using materials around the home, they can make a huge difference in their child's life.
Okay. Let's use some of those goals to examine what families and kids are up against in the home. An implicit fact is that families have changed and are continuing to change. We're now seeing more types of families and living arrangements than ever before. A case in point is the role of grandparents, which you mentioned, now estimated to be caring for as many as 34% of young children.
Yes,
is that the way it is?
And rising.
The 2010 U.S. Census, and this is in some ways a limited account, reported more than 2.9 million children being raised primarily by grandparents.
Yes.
Is this an important fact of life where we live here in the UP? What's behind it, you think?
Well, there are a number of reasons, and I'm sure Jean can help out with that, but a lot of it is economic.
Mm-hmm.
You have, if parents can find a job, you have two parents working in the home, and they need child care if they're going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And once the children enter school, they're going to need after school care, and grandparents are coming forward to do that. You have drug abuse, alcoholism. You have people in the military, and a number of family problems where baby boomers are stepping forward because they see the need. And also it's a pleasure to help out their family.
Sure.
I know three grandparents personally who have retired and moved to live closer to their children to help out with childcare.
Those conversations with kids may be the best you'll ever have.
Oh, they are. But it's also stressful. And that's what we're trying to help parents and grandparents with, the child care stress.
We should also point out that, daycare and other preschool things are expensive.
Yes.
And the people working in them are grossly underpaid.
Yes.
And, have trouble sticking with the profession once they get there because, the lack of rewards, that would help them to live, everyday life. So, mm-hmm. So that's another problem. It's sometimes mentioned that one factor in the changing American family is a high rate of incarceration. Mm-hmm. You've held workshops at the Marquette County Detention Center, I understand. And this become an annual event? Try and explain the detention factor itself and what you've encountered in this context.
We work with fathers and grandfathers, and mm-hmm. they're in the detention center for up to 18 months.
Okay.
And we go there every other month for an hour and a half, and we do hands-on activities with the guys. And we start out with donuts and make sure that the smell of these fresh donuts entice them to come. But we really, they look forward to our visits. And
Good.
We start out with some basic parenting principles, and then we have five or six activities, sample activities, where we show them how they can do these activities while talking to their children and grandchildren. And often they will say, no one ever did this with me. I didn't know that this was so important. Many of these guys have not had parenting and an intact family for five generations.
I see.
And so they want to do better for their children.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the time. They are with us. They don't have to come with us, although now many of the older detention center people will say, you are going there. If there's a new young father that's
yeah.
just come into the center, they say, you are going to come into this activity. You will love it. And they do, and they go home with our book. And we will often see them out in the community, and they'll wave to us from the kitchen and
sure.
haul us back there and say, oh, I have shared this with my girlfriend, and what activities are you going to do next time? Because I want to make sure my girlfriend or my wife does these activities because they're so important. So they'll stop us in the community
okay.
and tell us how important this is to them.
Any cases stand out for you, Jean?
Well, I was thinking of a gentleman that was there. He's been there probably through three of our sessions, so he was there for at least 6 months. And he did say to us, he said, when my girlfriend comes, I share these activities with her so that she could do them with our son. And you can't leave there without one of them having a story that pulls your heartstring. You just can't.
Tell us something about the book, Learning Through the Seasons, currently available.
Yes, it's available at the Children's Museum. In fact, any proceeds go to the Children's Museum, the UP Children's Museum, to help out with their projects. But what it is taking a look at the standards of Head Start and Great Start, national and state standards of working with children in a preschool environment, and then saying, well, how can we transfer this into the home using things that would be readily available in the home,
right.
like socks and blocks and that sort of thing? And what can grandparents do no matter what their educational background? Although I've had PhDs that say, working with kids makes me really nervous. And what's nice is that these activities kind of open up conversation.
Yes.
And they're simple, and everybody relaxes and has a good time and has fun, and they're very easy.
I've seen demonstrations you've done making and using Play-Doh, assembling a science kit, working with blocks, making shapes. This is real hands-on stuff. Perhaps you can show us a good example.
Yes.
Here. Clear the decks.
No interview would be... can I come out here?
Sure.
All right. So everybody has water around, and you make a puddle. And then put a couple drops of dish detergent. And then make your hand kind of like a claw.
Okay.
And start out with a bubble.
Yeah.
And you're going to have the cleanest countertops when you do this. And, Gina, if you want to kind of tell us what we're doing here.
And what the first thing you want to do with a young child is get them to understand that they're going to blow and not suck in on the straw. And then you put the straw as close as you can to the edge of the table, mm-hmm. and you begin to blow, and the bubble will start to grow. And a child, you can talk with a child about the colors that you see in a bubble. For example, the red represents the thinnest of the bubble skin.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, and you can see the other
colors. Little thing about optics there.
Yes. You know, and young children, what they want to do is they want to pop it. You know, they're not really interested in how big can I make it? How quick can I pop it? And then you can start to talk about measurement. You know, how big did that bubble get before it popped?
The 10.
And you can keep track of that, you know, and see if you can have a contest. Who's going to blow the biggest bubble or, you know, something like that. So now you've brought math into it as well as the science, as well as having just plain old fun.
That's a good question there. Overall, how do you determine what's both engaging for kids and pedagogically useful?
I think just about any activity that you do is going to be fun and engaging. Mm-hmm. You can bring the simplest task into play and make it fun.
Yeah.
And you can teach them something. Let's just take the standard of sorting.
Okay.
So we can bring out socks as we're doing laundry and sorting socks.
Okay.
Playing with Legos. We can sort the Legos. Baby dolls, their shoes. There's so many things in the household that's not costing you a single thing, but yet you are teaching that concept of sorting by color, mm-hmm. by property, by amount. So that's just, you make it fun, they learn.
Okay. Let me take a moment here to remind our viewers and especially our radio listeners that we're talking about home preschooling here with the founder of Grandparents Teach Too, Iris Caters, and former school administrator, guidance counselor, and current president of Grandparents Teach Too, Gene Hetrick. We're speaking of young children here and productive play. There's some criticism of this approach that I've read, urging that kids should start earlier with more highly structured experiences if we're going to close the gap in science achievement and all those sorts of things. But there's also considerable research to show that traditional play-based structures really work. Tell us about play and your approach to teaching and learning.
Well, I think Gene mentioned that you can teach any concept, really, through play.
Okay.
And that's how children learn, really. There is a window of opportunity between 0 and 5 to learn. And this is a time that will never happen again.
Right.
And if we...
And kids are terribly efficient at it.
Oh, they are.
250 times more efficient than ordinary
exactly.
adults, right?
And so if you want to teach triangles or anything else, you could use pencil and paper. But children are going to remember probably much better if it's hands-on.
Okay.
And it's fun. And they're sitting next to an adult, and they're smiling, and the adult is praising, and you're looking right in each other's eyes, mm-hmm. and it might not be a long period of time because the children's attention span is so short, but it probably is more efficient to learn hands-on than it is with pencil and paper or on the computer.
Okay.
And I just wanted to clarify something. We're not saying that grandparents should suddenly take over preschooling.
Yeah.
It's more of helping out, whether the child goes to a formal preschool setting, mm-hmm. or the parent or grandparent is just, or the grandparent is helping with babysitting, with child care.
Okay.
So we're not advocating a homeschooling or anything like that. That's different topic.
And I often think that those that criticize the thought of play in a preschool, mm-hmm. they don't really understand the developmental stages that a child goes through.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important.
When she was talking, I thought of operational versus, what is it, the Piaget standards are like two.
Yes.
One is occupational, mm-hmm. I mean operational, or pre-operational, the other is operational,
yes.
something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Having to do manipulating things. I'm sorry.
Right. And I often think that you just don't understand the developmental stages that a child goes through and play, the importance of play. I have a 2-year-old granddaughter, and the things that she has learned just through play just, you know, amazes me as I watch it happen.
Yeah.
So I know that it occurs. And
but you're also capable of recognizing what's happening.
True. But I think any parent would recognize that their child is picking up language,
yeah,
that their child is picking up a book and mimicking a story.
Okay.
You know, for example, a very simple book, Brown Bear, Brown Bear.
Mm-hmm.
And at 2 years old, is she reading that? No, she's not.
Memorizing.
She's imitating the story that she's heard. And that's the first stage of reading. That's a developmental stage that we don't want to do without.
Yeah.
And every family is a teaching family. We need to make sure that children hear 3 million words before they start school. And if they're going to be a reader, these words need to be in their heads, because what is reading but words put down on paper?
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit here coming up. Let's say I'm a grandparent. I'm interested in this preschool education project with kids at home. A couple of questions to get me started here. First, what's required for a successful learning environment?
Well, a little bit of understanding of how a young child works. First of all, a child has very short attention span. And if they are finished playing or doing something, forget it. It's time to move on.
Okay.
Also, a very important idea is to do something active, running around, throwing things, and then have some quiet activities where they're drawing or painting. Make sure that they're being read to at least twice a day.
Okay.
Nice time is nap time. And it's very important that grandparents do not think that they have to be entertaining the children every moment.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a time and place for the child to rest and the grandparent to rest, or the grandparent's going to be worn out. Also, that there's a time for a snack, nutrition, good nutrition. But essentially, if they take a look at our book and realize that, you know, they can do a little bit of science, a walk in the woods and talk about things, it's mostly talking.
Okay.
And then the social, so that children are learning please and thank you and understanding that they're a very valuable person, and what they do is so wonderful, because grandpa has said, what a great job you're doing. Let's put that paper on the refrigerator.
Reinforcement.
Like exactly. And then some emotional growth. We know that social and emotional growth are just as important. The emotional things are talking about their feelings and anger and happiness and sadness. But those are the basic things, changing activities and honest praising, accepting the child's ability wherever it may be, being proud of any products that they do. That refrigerator should be just plastered with different papers. I'm sure that they were at your house. And things like that, the short attention span, don't push it.
Okay. The John Dewey said any experience can be educative, but not all of them are, at least up to the standard we like. How do you know when you've gotten there? How do you know when you put that lesson across?
You see a light bulb come on.
Yeah, you do. The eyes light up. The eyes sparkle, and that's what you want to see. And they'll ask for the activity again. Can we blow bubbles again? And the adult, can we read that story again? Then you know.
Let's talk about that particularly, especially significant, at least with the emphasis on standardized testing these days, is verbal ability, specifically reading. Recent studies show that children entering kindergarten in recent years have half the vocabulary of a similar child in the 1950s. Something has happened there.
Mm-hmm.
Explain the importance of reading here.
Well, first of all comes the talking, as I mentioned before. So probably the talking is the first
activities.
Exactly.
That you mentioned.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And when adults say, oh, gee, I don't know what to talk to with a 3-year-old, they will, then start doing an activity that lends itself to talking.
Okay. Okay.
And so that is really important. But reading twice a day, we know will help a child be ready, reading to them twice a day, and going to the library, and then matching up an interest. If they see a program, Sid the Science Kid, and they're talking about rotten bananas, well, then go and look up what mold looks like, and go to the library, the Children's Museum, and find something that you can talk more about.
What's the overall goal? Are we looking for a certain number? Are we looking for a certain expansion of vocabulary, or what's the benefit we're actually looking for if we were to take a look at it, say, statistically or something?
Well, a child who is read to comes to kindergarten with a vocabulary of about 20,000 words.
Okay.
Not that they might use it, but they understand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And a child who is not worked with comes with 3,000 words.
Wow.
And there's a huge difference. And teachers, you'd think, perform miracles, but they cannot be that much of a miracle worker. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important that we do these things in the home, in the family.
And we need to understand that the TV and DVDs that we often put children in front of have a limited vocabulary.
Yeah, they don't substitute for books.
No, and they don't substitute for that real conversation mm-hmm. that you want to have. You know, and I'm not knocking technology, but we have a tendency to place our young children more and more in front of tablets and computers now.
Yeah.
They have a place. Sit down next to them. Play a game and talk about that game on the computer or the tablet that your child is interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just don't place it there and walk away and have your child interact with that game by themselves.
I think it's very interesting because right now they're, you know, across the country they're doing, discussing preschool, mm-hmm. You know, boosting preschool efforts in various states. And one observation might be that competing proposals seem to be, seem to lack some kind of the nurturing factor you're all talking about. For example, in Utah, it's a contest between classroom and online learning. For preschool. Not many grandmas in that scenario, right?
No, and unfortunately, Michigan is also looking at that aspect of it.
Are they? Okay.
You know, so it's unfortunate because you need that social growth,
mm-hmm.
and you don't get that from online.
Yeah.
And you need that emotional feedback, and you don't get that from online learning.
Well, that's unfortunate because the state-funded preschool enrollment has doubled since 2002. About 30% of all four-year-olds nationwide are involved in some of this. In the past year, Michigan and five other states have enacted newer expanded programs, and dozens of other proposals are in the works. How do you evaluate? Could you give us a little more about what Michigan is doing?
Well, you know, I'm pleased that Michigan is increasing the amount of monies that they want to spend on early childhood. We have a long ways to go before we reach the number of children that truly need to be reached.
Okay.
You know, and unfortunately, when the federal government cuts back, the state has to cut back because that's where the share of the monies come from. But we can't make preschool be the end all to everything.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be some aspect of follow through at the home. I think that the monies also need to be spent in parenting classes, teaching parents how do you interact, because there are parents that didn't have that interaction with their own parents.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore they have not been taught that. How do I interact with a child? I've got this child and I don't know what to do with it,
mm-hmm.
you know, with that child. And so if we could put some monies toward parenting classes and make that a part of Great Start and Head Start where these kinds of activities are taught,
mm-hmm.
I think we would be more successful.
Okay, let's go to that. The President Obama's call for $75 billion in federal spending, preschool spending, funded by further taxes on tobacco. States' rights people say it's a federal incursion on their territory, and there's all kinds of problems with it. Critics also point to federally funded programs like Head Start, whose real education results appear to fall off after 3 years in all but ideal cases. Now, I don't think anyone is saying that Head Start is not worth doing necessarily, but it's not enough, right?
Right. I guess my question is, what's happening at home once the child gets there from the classroom?
Okay. The should parents, grandparents, and guardians who step up via these projects get any special consideration in these federal or state-funded sorts of programs.
Mm-hmm, as Jean mentioned, let's make them part of the schools. Let's make them part of Head Start and show that they are expected. This will be difficult, but show them that they are expected to come into Head Start and observe, to attend parenting classes, that it would be a part of the whole process. Because otherwise, as we've said before, in the evening and in the summertime, on weekends, children slide back. And this is part of the whole, working together. And perhaps people say, oh, but we can't go around training parents. Why not?
Okay.
Why not? Why can't we have churches being part of the project? We have marriage classes. Can't we have parenting classes?
Sure.
If we don't make it mandatory, I know people would say, oh, well, let's not make it mandatory. Yes, you need a license. And yet, you know, for parenting, we don't really need any training. And perhaps it's time to make parenting a part of the whole education process.
Okay. We've got about a minute here. There's considerable debate over the so-called Common Core initiative, although no specific curriculum is dictated by it. Do you see usefulness in the concept of common standards for preschool?
Yes, I do. Certainly do.
Yeah. You know, and I think that right now there's no Common Core for preschool. There are standards, federal and state, as Iris had stated earlier. But that Common Core is going to drive what happens in the preschool. As No Child Left Behind was enacted in the classrooms, it brought down the fact that kindergartners need to enter school knowing all of the letters of the alphabet, where before that was something that was taught in kindergarten. So now that puts that emphasis back into a preschool.
So it's at least informed the conversation and probably given a direction to any future efforts to have a Common Core. Is there one thing in the Common Core that you think ought to be important for preschool?
Well, I think it's the aspect of the verbal ability again.
Okay.
You know, I think that's really important.
Okay. I'm afraid we have to leave it there for time. We've been talking about home preschooling with educator, author, and founder of Grandparents Teach Too, Iris Caters, and former school administrator, guidance counselor, and current president of Grandparents Teach Too, Jean Hetrick. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, our pleasure.
I'm Bill Hart. Thanks for joining us on Media Meet.
The preceding program was produced in studios located in the Edgar L. Hardin Learning Resources Center by WNMU-TV, Northern Michigan University Public Television.